Welcome to Speak Up, the official podcast of Speech Pathology Australia. We bring you insightful conversations with leading professionals about key issues and innovations in speech pathology, all in a concise format that's perfect for your busy schedule. We aim to inform, inspire, and also engage. We love hearing from you, so please join the conversation on our social media platforms or email us with your thoughts and questions. And please subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues. Your support helps us grow and inform, inspire and engage others. Now, let's embark on today's conversation.
Welcome to this week's Speech Pathology Australia's Speak Up podcast. My name is Kim Teresi, SPAR's Senior Advisor for Aged Care, coming to you today from the lands of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong peoples. And I'm delighted to be joined here today by Naomi Folder, speech pathologist within the Illawarra Shoalhaven Local Health District, a PhD candidate with the University of Technology in Sydney, and the SPAR project officer for the new dementia practice guideline. And we're here today to talk a little bit more about the speech pathology role and working with people with dementia as we reflect on SPAR's new practice guideline, working with people with lived experience of dementia. So welcome, Naomi. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Kim. It's wonderful to be here.
So firstly, we might reflect on this new SPAR practice guideline and why we identified the need for it. We know that there's a growing percentage of the population of older people. So the numbers of people living with dementia are going to increase. And we've seen that despite speech pathologists having the skills and knowledge to work in this area, few speech pathologists were actually getting to practice to full scope of practice, perhaps only seeing people with dementia at later stages for swallowing, for example, rather than in early stages or supporting communication for participation. We were seeing sometimes where other disciplines are starting to step into that communication space. And while SPAR's actively undertaking advocacy in this area and promoting the role of speech pathology, we also saw that we need to increase confidence and numbers of speech pathologists in this area of practice to meet those population needs. So we're really excited by the launch of this new practice guideline for the profession. I wanted to ask you, Naomi, what's been your experience and what were your thoughts regarding the need for this practice guideline for speech pathologists?
Yeah, so for me, I've been working in a geriatric hospital for a very large portion of my clinical life, even starting in my very first year of working. And I noticed that most, if not all, of my patients had dementia at some point on my caseload. And I just remember thinking at the time, I know so much about stroke, I know so much about brain injury and other brain conditions, but I feel like I know nothing about dementia. And I think at university, reflecting on it, we may have gotten maybe half a presentation about dementia over the 2 year master's that I did. And then looking at our clinical materials in the department as well, when I started working, we really had very minimal on therapies, on different assessments to use, even just education about dementia itself as well. I then came across the Understanding Dementia MOOC online course with University of Tasmania. And after doing that, I really realized how significant dementia is, how pervasive it is across the population, but not just there, but also within speech pathology as well. It made sense that so much of my caseload was people living with dementia in the geriatric hospital. I also realized that there's just so much that we can offer in speech pathology for people living with dementia to support their communication and their swallowing. And this led me to then do a Diploma of Dementia Care with the University of Tasmania, and then extend my passion further into a PhD, specifically looking at communication partner training for families of people living with dementia at UTS with Emma Power, Deborah Parker, Leanne Tour, and Rachel Riedek, my wonderful supervisors. I then also got in contact with Jade Cartwright for advice around my PhD, and she suggested joining the Dementia Community of Practice with Speech Pathology Australia, which was an absolutely wonderful opportunity to connect with like-minded speechies, all passionate about dementia care. And with this group, we all created an advocacy article on the speech pathologist's role in dementia care with the Journal of Clinical Practice of Speech Language Pathology, because we all had that feeling of we're just not doing enough and we're not in this space. And so appropriately, we named it Stepping Back into the Dementia Space. I think that was back in 2022 that that was published. So I really like to think of this as the very beginning of the practice guidelines because it really emphasized how broad our role is across dementia care and how speech pathologists need a lot more guidance and support to actually step back into this dementia space.
Thanks, Naomi. And I think they're really valuable personal reflections that I have heard oftentimes. So I think people will really resonate with your journey there and reflecting on your caseload and resources and what skills you could transfer across. Yeah. So you came on board with Speech Pathology Australia as the project officer for the new dementia practice guideline. I wondered if you could just give us a little bit of a rundown, brief overview, I guess, of the process of developing a practice guideline. Might not be something that everyone's so aware of.
No, definitely. And I don't think I was completely aware of it when I first started either. But it was, yeah, quite a big process. It's definitely not something that's just whipped up very quickly. Once we have the project officer and me appointed, then we went to work on recruiting a bit of a working party. So we established this through expression of interest, and we got a whole range of really wonderful clinicians and researchers across communication and swallowing and dementia in various fields within health, within university, in NDIS. So we really had a very broad range of people involved, to a lot of them being experts in their own right in dementia. So yeah, so it definitely wasn't a short process or something that we very quickly whipped together. It did take a lot of teamwork and a lot of work to put this practice guideline together. And we really have to thank our amazing working party for working so hard and doing all of this work to really make these practice guidelines what they are today. We really couldn't have done it without them. So we just want to say big thanks to all of you working in our working party. We then had multiple meetings to decide on the key content areas that we wanted based on our own clinical experiences, but also on the research that we knew of or that people in the group had actually produced as well. And once we decided on those key content areas, we then completed a literature review of each area, divvied this up between us, and looked at what's the latest research in each of these areas. We then reviewed the research and reviewed the content areas. We did a bit of a draft write-up to see what was missing or what needed to be changed or modified, and if anything from our clinical expertise and our own experiences was also missing as well. For example, things like oral care and oral hygiene that we know is really important clinically but may not have as much research within the speech pathology space. We also then looked at writing up the draft guidelines once we had all these key content areas kind of more formalized. And then it was a lot of back and forth of drafting and having multiple drafts and going through the document, adding in new research as it came across as well. And then once we were happy with our kind of initial main draft, we got the Speech Pathology Australia Professional Standards team to review this, and as well as getting copy editing review as well to make sure that there weren't any mistakes. And then once we had this document, we got two independent experts who are specialists in dementia to review the document, and who also have a speech pathology background as well. They reviewed the document, gave more advice or comments and suggestions around the content or other research that we could include, and or other areas to include as well. And then once we addressed all those comments, we then submitted this for member feedback. Yeah, as I mentioned, it's definitely not a short process. It was very carefully thought out with multiple drafts and reviews over, I think, a year or more now at this point. And we really wanted it to be that comprehensive document to really cover all of what speech pathologists can do in this space with when working with people living with dementia. So I think we've definitely achieved that.
Thanks for outlining all of that, Naomi. It certainly is a very comprehensive process, as you've outlined. Perhaps now I'll ask you to tell us a little bit more about the guidelines and what they actually cover, sorry. I guess people may be wondering, is this just about primary progressive aphasia or is it just about swallowing? Can you tell us a little bit more about what is covered by the practice guideline?
Yeah, of course. So, of course, we have those areas about PPA, about swallowing, our general like assessments and therapies that we can use in this space, and of course for communication. But it does a lot more than this as well. It co really covers a very bird's eye look across a whole continuum of care for people living with dementia. So our role across the continuum of care from diagnosis to end of life within swallowing and communication. So it's really a guide for speech pathologists working with people living with dementia throughout the whole trajectory. It also includes supporting family members, working within multidisciplinary teams, as well as guidance on our role in behaviour support as well. I really like that this document includes the overall guiding principles of care when working with people living with dementia as well, such as personhood and person-centred care, as well as approaches to intervention such as rehabilitation, reablement, and so on. So it really gives kind of everything that we could possibly do when working with people living with dementia and how we go about doing that.
So a real framework for practice across the continuum of care, as you've said. If we were going to perhaps just briefly touch on a few areas, for example, what would you say are some of the key principles in swallowing management in dementia that the practice guideline outlines?
Yeah, so I think in swallowing specifically, it really emphasizes that a range of approaches can be taken with people living with dementia and that we need to be very holistic about what best suits the person at that time. So, using personhood and person-centered care to really frame the approach to care that we do, even in swallowing management. So, looking at quality of life, of course, looking at safety, but also looking at nutrition and hydration. So, it also discusses how things, for example, like direct interventions can still be very much appropriate for people living with dementia to improve their swallow function and achieve their goals. And it provides discussion regarding the pros and cons of common compensatory approaches, such as thickened fluid, which is a bit of a hot topic at the moment, as well as how such these approaches really need to be holistic and consider the nutrition, the medical condition, the person's preferences, and their quality of life as well. So this includes things like eating and drinking at acknowledged risk as well, of course. We also give some general advice around other areas that are really pertinent in dementia care, for example, oral care and oral hygiene, given that this is significant not just in dementia but in aged care, as well as advice on medications that might affect swallowing, as well as working with pharmacists and medical professionals to highlight how swallowing impairments may impact these oral medications. One thing that's also a bit more specific to dementia as well is our role in supporting the environment around mealtimes as well. So we know that this is really important in terms of maintaining swallowing and nutrition and hydration in dementia. So using things like Montessori approaches, cueing or modifying the physical environment to best support the person living with dementia with their swallowing. So it's a really broad, holistic view, which is what I really love about this document.
Fantastic. And of course, a key aspect of our role, as you alluded to, is often, thinking broadly around the environment. So also providing support to families and support networks.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And in the document, I think we really highlight how we really need to support the family members and the care partners and overall support this whole support network of the person living with dementia. So we've included in the document general advice around linking with supportive services through Dementia Australia and local alliances, but also our role in providing training and support to this support network. So this includes things about communication partner training and how speech pathologists can implement CPT and what common CPT programs are readily available. And we also talk about support groups and facilitating support groups with people living with dementia and their support network, especially in PPA. And we also delve into our role within change behaviours, unmet needs, and behaviour supports as well.
What are some key speech pathology roles in dementia that you think speech pathologists may not be quite as familiar with or?
Yeah, I think for me, especially when I first started as well, I think our role in behaviour support is definitely something that people aren't super aware of. When we talk about expressions of unmet needs or change behaviours and, medically termed BPSD, they're often due to the communication breakdown when the person is unable to express what they need. And so they may act in other ways, like agitation or calling out, for example. And I think speech pathologists have a really significant role in supporting behaviour support plans and these non-pharmacological approaches to behaviour management through identifying communication breakdowns and supporting families and care partners to manage these symptoms. Research has shown as well that a lot of the communication strategies that we use in dementia and across communication in other etiologies do overlap with personhood and validation approaches, such as acknowledging frustrations, giving short pieces of information at a time, and providing reassurance. So, because of our really in-depth knowledge of communication and how communication works and how we can support communication, we can provide significant support to people living with dementia to reduce these expressions of unmet needs and better manage them. The practice guideline really goes into depth about how we can investigate, understand these change behaviours and support families and care partners to manage these expressions of unmet needs through personhood, validation, communication strategies, and these behaviour support plans as well. Another area that I think people may be interested in is our role in supporting communication in capacity and decision making. So I really like this section because it emphasises that capacity is complex and situation specific. It does not assume in any way that people living with dementia automatically lack capacity, but instead is that something that we need to take a rights-based approach towards to support decision making for people living with dementia. And for us, this could be discussions around eating and drinking at acknowledged risk, for example, but of course spans out to various other decisions that people living with dementia may face in terms of their healthcare or their daily activities or their overall life as well. I think we have a really key role in supporting decision making by presenting information in this dementia-friendly way, specific to their communication needs, and educate other health professionals on how to best support communication during decision making discussions. So a simple change, something like using yes or no questions or binary choices instead of an open-ended question, could mean that this person is able to better communicate their wants and needs and even make their own healthcare decisions. So I think that's something that's such a really important role that we have that I'm really happy that our practice guideline has included.
Indeed, that really well articulated there, Naomi, I think, in terms of reflecting on those areas and where the speech pathologists can contribute to those areas of practice. One thing I was reflecting on in the practice guideline, as you've mentioned, it's trying to take a really comprehensive overview of the whole system is in the area of funding mechanisms. It's still something that we're grappling with sometimes moving into this area about where that funded service might come from for an individual living with dementia. And those funding systems can be really complex, particularly if you're not as familiar with working in that sector. What's your reflection on that area in the practice guideline?
Yeah, so I think for us this was really important to for us to include and for me personally to include because coming from the health system, NDIS and aged care schemes are definitely something I'm constantly trying to get my head around. And we thought that, likely everyone else is trying to as well. So we thought it was really important that in this practice guideline we did at least give some very basic guidance around NDIS and aged care and how this fits in to dementia. So I think especially in dementia, people may automatically think aged care, but we wanted to highlight that NDIS is also very much needed for people with younger onset dementia. And this is especially important as, once they're with NDIS, they're with them for life and they've got all those supports that will stay with them for a very long time. So you can get that really broad range of allied health and other supports that will continue throughout the dementia trajectory. We also wanted to highlight that as speech pathologists, we can support the person to apply for these schemes like NDIS and aged care through our assessments, development of the support plans, and advocating for assistive technologies as well. So in terms of the aged care system more specifically as well, again, advocating for those services for people living with dementia. So we can be those people applying for My Aged Care on behalf of a person or supporting them to refer to My Aged Care for services. And we really wanted to emphasise as well how much My Aged Care can support access to speech pathology and other allied health, such as through home support programs or short-term restorative care as well. So it's definitely not comprehensive regarding NDIS or aged care themselves, of course, because that could be a whole guideline in itself just on these respectively. But of course, there is a lot available online through NDIS and the My Aged Care websites and through SPAR as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think the guideline has a wealth of resources, a wealth of directions to other resources, and this area certainly is one of those, where, as you said, there's more information available online, both through different agencies, but at least if you sort of know where to start looking, it helps you be able to go in that direction. And in terms of more detailed guidance for speech pathologists around operational aspects of those systems, such as NDIS and the aged care system, just remembering that there's those resources such as SPAR fact sheets and information sheets on the SPAR website, as well as the SPAR Aged Care Guide for Speech Pathologists, which talks in a bit of depth about those different pathways in terms of funding mechanisms. So I guess, Naomi, as we're coming to the towards the end of this podcast today, I just wanted to reflect on our thoughts around how do we help speech pathologists gain confidence in practicing in this area? What would be your thoughts in that?
Yeah, so I guess really the practice guidelines will be the main document that I'll recommend at the moment. Once they're available, it will be a really wonderful thing for all speech pathologists to utilize and really look through to improve their services across dementia. Especially just to be aware of all the various roles that we have across dementia and gain that fundamental knowledge on what we can provide across communication and swallowing in dementia care. The practice guideline also, as you mentioned, links to so many practical articles and research and so on that speech pathologists can utilize, not just the practice guidelines, but the breadth of research that's out there to enhance their own clinical practice. And as we talked about in when I mentioned the Stepping Back into the Dementia Space article, we really talked about, this kind of area as well. How can we improve our practice and how can speech pathologists improve their confidence in the area? And I really think knowledge is power. Once you have the knowledge about dementia, you've got the knowledge about your role and what you can do, you can then better advocate and raise awareness for our role in the dementia space. So I found, from my personal experience, the online MOOCs with University of Tasmania were an absolutely fantastic place to start and really sparked my passion for dementia care as well. But there is so much out there on dementia and many groups that share knowledge and resources, such as the Younger Onset Dementia Special Interest Group, there's a Sydney Dementia Network, and even associations like the Australian Association of Gerontology as well. So heading along to dementia conferences has also really opened my eyes to what's out there and what's important in dementia care currently. So I'd highly recommend that for people. And of course, Speech Pathology Australia is working to create some really wonderful educational resources and with our own support groups as well, such as the Speech Pathology Australia Dementia Community of Practice. So if you are interested and if this is a passion area for you as well, please consider joining our little COP.
Indeed. I was indeed also going to give a plug for the Speech Pathology Australia Dementia Community of Practice. So please feel free to contact us. It's a group that we can certainly give you more information about, and it really spans quite a diverse range of speech pathologists, some who are coming more newly into this practice area, right through to people who are very, I guess, experienced and exploring this area in more depth. But indeed, today I think we've reflected quite a bit on the practice guideline, which we're so excited to see launched out there, and we'd really encourage people to take a look. Let us know what you think. Well, thank you, Naomi, for joining us today. It's been a wonderful discussion. I've really enjoyed listening to all of your reflections. So thanks for being here.
Thanks, Kim. I've really enjoyed being here today and talking about the guidelines. It's definitely, one of my passions, and I hope I've been able to spark some passion in other people listening today and, encourage people to have a really good look at the guidelines, spend some time on it, and, learn more about dementia and advocate for us stepping back into this space.
Thanks, Naomi. Thanks everyone for listening today.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's conversation. Please subscribe to the podcast and share with your colleagues and friends. You can also visit us at speechpathologyaustralia.org.au. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.